from the cohort who were going through with me at Manchester University. And of course, he'd worked in the civil service here in Yorkshire, and also down in London in the Central Office of Information. And Mike had worked on, for instance, preparing all kinds of things for Winston Churchill's funeral that was taking place months after he arrived there, along with another person who became a lifelong friend of ours, a young widow as was then. I never knew whether I was a competitor with Jo or not, but I don't think, but she's coming to our party next week anyway. But Mike was obviously very distinctive from all these other boys who had not done anything else other than just go through the kind of grammar school sausage machine. And that made a lot of difference for me. I hadn't intended really to get married. I hadn't intended to stay in England. I'd actually been, as soon as my A-levels had finished, I went straight over to France, because at that stage, I mean, I did have a French granny, bear in mind. So I had good French. And I went and au-paired with a family who were half French, half English, and who worked in the Western European Union and simultaneous translation in Paris, just down from the Eiffel Tower, their offices were. And we lived in this village. And I had one child to look after, who was extremely easy. But then we had a whole stream of people coming through to stay while I was there. Some really fascinating people, quite a few politicians. We had Joe Grimond, who came on one occasion. We had a defence minister who came. Michael Heseltine came. And there were some fascinating dinner parties that we had. And the family encouraged me to, although I helped with the catering and various things like that and put the kids to bed, they would encourage me to come back to the table. I think I met my first impressive gay person there, who was actually the cousin of Nubar Gulbenkian, if you're aware of the Gulbenkian Foundation. And he encouraged me in all kinds of ways to develop things for a later career. And he took me out on a couple of occasions to fabulous restaurants in Paris. And that was an amazing experience that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Also, I was taken quite often to embassy parties because the parents of Mathieu then, who I was with, because both of them had worked in the upper echelons of the civil service, they got invited to all the embassy parties in Paris. So I got invited too. And I got taken by one of the Gulbenkians on one occasion, but I was there on another occasion when Princess Margaret turned up, and I'd heard from Babette, the mother of Mathieu, the child who I was principally looking after, I heard that everybody dreaded Princess Margaret turning up, because she invariably turned up very drunk, and it was very embarrassing for everybody. I mean, what can you do? And people were trying to manoeuvre her into side rooms, etc., were trying desperately to get her chauffeur who rumour had it that she was having an affair with, but that's another issue. So she was yelling and screaming, and that's the first time I ever heard a woman use the F word very publicly. And I remember thinking, well, you know, what does one say? And I just came to the conclusion she was a very damaged individual. She wanted to marry Townsend, wasn't allowed to, and I think it was just basically downhill all the way. Mm. But when I went out, I got this job with this family through a babysitting job that I'd done for one of our friends in the village I was living in Staffordshire with my parents at that stage. So this gave me a tremendous insight into all sorts of things, international really. And that's when I decided that I wanted to have some sort of international career. And then, of course, it led up me on to Mike and his international career as well. So all in all, I think it's worked out incredibly well, because we've seen a lot of people with international careers whose marriages have fallen apart. And it can be very easy to get seduced into alternative sorts of relationships, no doubt. But we've been very, very fortunate, haven't we, darling? Yeah. And, you know, I never thought I would be so happily married. My parents' marriage was a disaster, and I had sworn I would never get married, having...
You were going to be a nun, if you remember, dear.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten about that, yes, yes.
You put all thoughts of that out of my mind,
When I was 16, I went on a retreat and to the Little Sisters of the Assumption in Manchester, and they were amazing because they were in all sorts of African tribal zones. And I thought to be honest, I think it sounded all terribly exciting and probably wouldn't have been anyway. I would never have predicted that I would have sort of got involved in all of these kinds of things. But, you know, that's how things have been dealt to me. And we've both taken the opportunities, haven't we, darling, and been very, very fortunate to have had such a good marriage, particularly after my parents' battleground. Anyway, I wish you all well. I'm so glad you all came. It's lovely to see you all, because obviously, although we're not halfway around the world or anything like that, it's difficult, isn't it, for all of you. You've got all sorts of relationships, you've got all sorts of commitments, etc., yourselves, and we do understand that. So thank you very much for coming. It really is super, and it's been very special for us. So I think I'm going to cry, but
we don't mind.
But I'm very happy. Yes, I'm very moved. That's what happens. But thanks again for coming, and I hope you continue to enjoy the afternoon. We've got some more time here now, so why
not?
Not
rushing anywhere.
Just want to tell you one funny story involving both Meg and I. Because a letter arrived in the department that only Meg could understand and translate in Spanish, inviting us to enter into a relationship with the University of the Complutense University in Spain.
Which is the Oxford of Spain.
It's like the equivalent of Oxford or Cambridge of Spain. So we thought, we can't not do this. So we got together into a relationship with the other university. And that's eventually why I went out there and taught for a term out there. So we went out there and we were having to explain what polytechnic education was all about, how people spent 2 years in...
This is thick sandwich education.
2 years, and then a year out in industry, and then a year back in again. And we explained it, and we felt very proud of ourselves, because Leicester took it really seriously.
They did.
Some people didn't, but we did it very well. And actually, another thing I was very proud about, I forgot to mention it, I shouldn't have done, Meg was probably the foremost placement tutor in the country, because you placed upwards of 40 students in paid jobs every year.
Yeah.
And some of them were not very placeable people. And these were not just supernumeraries. They had to actually get a full-time paid placement from which they could be sacked for misconduct, you know, that sort of thing.
And the ones who were doing the language options, I managed to get jobs in Spain, usually for them, one in France.
So Meg was incredibly... It's a very sort of unsung part of the polytechnic story.
Yes, yes.
And all of that's gone now, unfortunately. But it's a pity when you...
It is.
Oh, I've got another story, which is absolutely true. Not a word of a lie. We had our wedding reception in the Queen's Hotel in Manchester. Knocked down, redeveloped. Our son was born in... Manchester, the maternity
hospital,
now knocked down and turned into a car park. I then went off to Salford University, and when I went back to visit it some time ago, I thought, there's a building here.
You did a master's.
That was a core appeal building, and I had a word with the commissioner, oh, high luminous cement, we've knocked it down, I'm afraid, and it's just a green area. So then we went down to Leicester, and we went into a large concrete building, which was phase one of a two-building development called the James Went Phase One.
He was the former mayor of Leicester.
Got knocked down. We moved into the other, got knocked down. We moved off to Scraptoff College of Education, which became part of the Polytechnic. We taught there for about 10 years. We subsequently left there, knocked down. So everywhere we have ever been...
Winchester still standing.
a wrecking ball. A wrecking ball was moved.
We'll check it for you.
But
not currently sure.
But oh, isn't that uncanny? Everything we've ever been, a wrecking ball.
It's your effect.
But what was rather pathetic, as a little addendum to that, was that when Martin had to keep going backwards and forwards to the Royal Eye Hospital because he was born with a strabismus. And so we were going back frequently. And we started talking about how all these places are being knocked down. And Mike said, oh yes, and you know, the hospital where you were born, that was knocked down. He said, why is it that wherever I've been, they've then knocked it down?
And last time we went to Manchester, we said, that's where the hospital was, where you were born. I said, was I born in a car park? Yes. Well, yes, you were. Yeah. Now, the other thing, and this is, so we went to Madrid University to start off this interrelationship, and we were very sort of pleased with ourselves, as it were, and we started explaining to the dean of the faculty what we did in polytechnics and how we'd been doing this for at least 10 years. He said, yes, he said, we too are quite experienced in international education. Since 1492, actually, which was the best kind of academic plan I've ever had. But the other funny thing was, as the dean of the faculty, he had to sign off the bill. Now the bill...
For this meal.
There were 200 pesetas to the pound.
Were there 16 of us, I think?
Oh, there were many more than that.
I'm thinking of a different one.
Yeah, there were at least 25 of us, and the bill then was at least 50 or 60 pounds a head, times 200. The bill came to something like 2 million pesetas, you know, or 200,000 pesetas. You know these B movies where somebody's eyes go, it was just like that. It was counting up the notes as you went along.
Yeah.
Because he had to sign it off. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
But,
really
oh,
funny.
The other thing, and this absolutely pays tribute to me. This dean was called Dean Paniagua, which translates into English as Mr. Bread and Water.
Bread and Water.
Which sounds very funny.
Yeah, that was his surname.
Paniagua. But he was a bit of a prickly character.
He was a real stuffed shirt.
And our contact, Mariana Baena, who sort of had a stroke. Mariana Baena sat Meg next to the dean and said, get him talking about something. Because we know that when we went into different organisations, you just had to find the key to unlock the relationship. So Meg and I chatted with this chap, or Megan, the other chap chatted, and you found a joint interest
in horses.
Horses.
Because I used to go and ride my uncle's horses and my granny's horses. And so we started talking about that. I couldn't shut him up. And the rest of the people around the table, some of them were sort of going off because we'd had our liqueurs and various things. And I couldn't stop him talking and stop, you know, just back away and say, look, we're terribly sorry, but we really must finish here. And I could see some of the other people rolling their eyes. But they were all amazed that actually there was something I could release in Paniagua. So they said, "That's the we'll always remember that as an immense, immense achievement."
Anyway, yeah.
We've said enough.
I've got a story for the children. Can you count? Can you count up to 10? You sure?
Really?
No, not now. But you can count. You can count. That's all you have to tell me, right? Okay. Years ago, in America, there used to be what were called telegraph, this is before the internet and things, and before telephones, used to have things called telegraph stations where people could send a telegram.
Like a letter.
Like a letter, but you sent a telegram. Now, a dog walked into one of these, and the dog could talk, obviously, and it saw a sign that said, you can send 10 words for a dollar. This was 1930s. So, the dog said, I'd like to send a telegram, please. And they said, certainly, sir. Would you like to dictate it for us? So he said, right, 10 words. Woof, woof, woof. Woof, woof, woof.
Wait, can you start again?
Very clever. I will start again. He's well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Right. Woof, woof, woof. Woof, woof, woof. Woof, woof, woof.
No, that was nine.
Nine.
So the clerk said, well, I've recorded what you had to say, and shall I put an extra woof on the end? That'd be ridiculous. It wouldn't make any sense at all, he said.
Okay, thank you.
Just Okay, right, one more story that was told to us by a German friend. All right, this is a kind of Catholic story. Two Catholic stories. I'll tell you the first story. It's told me by quite a fervent Catholic. You remember the story of the woman taken in adultery?
Yes.
The woman taken into adultery. And basically what they did was they put her in a hole in the ground and everybody threw rocks at her until they killed her. I mean, that's what they did in those days. Anyway, there's an illustration of this woman being stoned to death. And Jesus was there saying, "Let he who without sin cast the first stone." And this woman in a blue dress came up and kept on piling rocks and sort of throwing rocks like this. And Jesus turned around and said, "Mother." He said, "There are times when you really piss me off." I forgot the second story. Oh,
this must be the last,
dear. It will be the last. Yeah. The priest and the shepherds. I told you some of this last time. But you might have forgotten.
I might have heard this one, yeah.
The priest and the shepherds were holding a television quiz. A television quiz. And they got an equal number of scores at the end, so it was a tie. So who was going to win the prize? So the compere said, "Right, I will hold a competition that whoever composes a rhyme with the words Timbuktu in it will win the prize, if you get more audience applause." Now the priest had a chance to go first, and this is what the priest wrote collectively. He said, "I've been a father all my life, had no children, had no wife, read my Bible through and through, and I journeyed on to Timbuktu." And I said, "Oh, a little bit sad, but okay. Now, shepherds, what do you have to say?" And the shepherd said, "Ah, Tim and I to Paris went, met three women cheap to rent. They were three, but we were two, so I booked one and Tim booked two." But
that really is
the
end. Mike, what would we do without your story?
Really,
I know. Have we got anything we should do? Toast, or is that later?
No, you can do that now.
Right,
yes.
I'm taking
my glass. No, hold on. We've got a cake and a champagne.
Yeah, we'll
do
it later.
We're not letting you off lightly.
Okay, I'll ask for the